Good afternoon and welcome to this session. I'm very pleased to see a few of you here. I hope we will have the pleasure to share this session with even more participants. I will make sure to keep track of the waiting room in the session and let people in as they join. My name is Anna Forsman, and I'm Associate Professor in Health Sciences at the Åbo Academy University in Vaasa, Finland. And we are going to explore and discuss mental health promotion practices today, conducted in the Nordic context. And together with me, I have four of my colleagues who all share the common interest of health promotion practices in various contexts. And we're going to hear a bit about their interesting work today. And we're also going to have a panel discussion where you have the possibility to ask questions to the researchers that will present their work today. And I think we will start actually with the presentation section, and then we will move forward to the panel discussion. But we have also, I will share the agenda here of the workshop. We have divided the time between the four researchers so that each of the presenters have 15 minutes altogether, including questions and comments from the audience. So please prepare questions or comments after the presentation so that we can share our views and experiences. And then after the presentations, we will follow up with the joint discussion. And here we will also involve you as the audience. And yes, I think without further ado, I will give the floor to the first presenter. And that is Dr. Johanna Nordmyr.
Thank you. Thank you to our chair for this introduction. Let me get my PowerPoint set up here. Thank you to those of you participating in our session this afternoon. I'm happy to open up with the first presentation here, focusing on the school context in Finland. And some of my colleagues will be focusing on other arenas in the following. Yes, so this is a presentation is a collaboration with the chair of this session. We work together in health sciences at Åbo Academy in Vaasa. And I can just add that the study on which this presentation is based on, an article will be published actually any day now in the Scandinavian Journal of Primary Healthcare. So I'll be including the reference at the end of this presentation for anyone interested. You can check this up later on as soon as it's available. Yes, but the school context, as I said, and the primary focus here is actually primary prevention of substance use. But in this study, mental health promotion emerged as a key issue. And through that, we felt that this presentation fit very well into the scope of this session. Yeah, a little bit about the background of this study. Substance use continues to be a challenge among young people, adolescents, both in Europe and the Nordic countries. And there's a lot of efforts focused on developing and evaluating various prevention efforts. For example, evaluating event intervention programs, policy initiatives, things like this. But in addition to this, it's very important to consider the perspectives of different personnel groups involved in the practical work surrounding this. And in this area, there's significantly less research performed, especially in Europe and the Nordic countries. We see some studies, for example, concerning the Canadian context and related to legalization of cannabis and things like this. I'd like to add here, considering specifically the Finnish context, the Finnish school context, it's important to note that we have some distinguishing features concerning, for example, legislation. The Finnish Pupil and Student Welfare Act, which was enforced in 2014, very focused on health promotion, mental health promotion, in addition to primary prevention efforts. We have pupil and student welfare professionals being situated and working in our school context in Finland. And this can be a bit different in other countries. These personnel groups may be situated elsewhere in communal services. We also have health education as a standalone subject in the national core curriculum. And this is also quite a special feature of our context. And these are things I will be happy to get back to and discuss more in relation to these study results later on in our panel discussion. The objective of the study in question was to explore Finnish school personnel representatives regarding roles and responsibilities in primary prevention work targeting substance use. We performed within the scope of an evaluation project, we performed 22 baseline focus group interviews, which were conducted before the initiation of a new substance use prevention model in regional schools. We included both representatives for educational personnel, that is teachers, special education teachers, and so on, and also representatives for student welfare personnel, that is school nurses, school psychologists, counselors, and so on, working on different educational levels in this study. We conducted semi-structured interviews with the questions focusing on perceived challenges and supporting factors in primary prevention work. If anyone's interested in the program, which will later be evaluated by us also in the evaluation project, it's information is available. It's the PEP project featured here. Unfortunately, information is only available in Nordic languages, so that's a limitation here. For this study in focus, we extracted interview content specifically focusing on issues of roles and responsibilities that emerged in these focus group interviews. And this was a theme that emerged in every one of the interviews conducted. So all this content was extracted and a qualitative content analysis performed. This is just to illustrate the overarching results of the qualitative content analysis. The overarching theme that emerged was primary prevention and health promotion through joint efforts between societal arenas and across school personnel groups. And the main categories were focusing on shared responsibilities, both within the school, between the school and other sectors, and also the homes, and also shared responsibilities concerning early actions and so forth. And while these interviews, as I said, primarily focused on prevention of substance use and related problems, health promotion, promotion of mental health especially was featured. It was felt by these participants that strengthening mental health in early age was a key in primary prevention of substance use. And a lot of focus was placed on the importance of strengthening resources, reflecting a salutogenic perspective in that regard, even though our informants would not use terminology such as this. This is how we interpret it. So all these categories and the theme concern both primary prevention of substance use and health promotion, and especially mental health promotion. And again, I'll open up this more in the subsequent panel discussion, but just to give you some sort of details from these results, some things that emerged within the subcategories of the study. We can note that the respondents felt that less emphasis was placed on health promotion and primary prevention, both in the municipality as a whole and in the schools. This was very much related to perceived limitations in resources and so forth. And it was felt that the health promotion aspects of the legislation was in this regard perhaps not translated so well into practice compared to secondary prevention processes and so on, which were seen as much more clear. If there were problems that emerged among students and so on, the processes, how to proceed in these cases were seen as very much clear. The responsibilities and roles were clear in that regard. Health education, as I mentioned, this is a standalone subject in Finnish schools, and this was overall both by teaching personnel and school welfare personnel perceived as something very positive, but there were also various limitations, challenges raised with regard to this subject in various ways, and I'll be happy to elaborate on this a bit more. Finally, I mentioned collaboration, joint efforts as being important. The homes, a lot of these interview participants very much stressed the importance of the homes also, and felt that sometimes an unreasonable or unrealistic expectation was placed on schools, school personnel in relation to both primary prevention and health promotion efforts, and that preschool settings and so on could also be further developed in this regard. So to sum up just briefly here, the importance of joint efforts, collaboration both within the school setting and between schools and other sectors, organizations, in both primary prevention and health promotion efforts were strongly emphasized by our participants. And as I said, the role of the homes, they felt this could be, the collaboration and structure surrounding this could be further developed and supported. Within the school context, the primary prevention and mental health promotion and health promotion in general, these responsibilities were viewed as less clear. The structures and so forth were much more developed for these secondary prevention responsibilities and roles. And as I mentioned, the legislation that was sort of a theme, a cross-cutting theme also in these results, that the translation of the Pupil and Student Welfare Act into practice could be further supported. That there's a bit of a gap here. And this also reflects earlier research findings in the Finnish context, where the legislation and its translation was evaluated a couple of years ago. Yeah, thank you very much. This was, as I said, just an introduction to this study, and I look forward to opening up and discussing some of these points that I've raised here a bit more in detail. As I said, this is the reference to the upcoming article, which we hope will be published this week, even if we're lucky. So. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Nordmyr. Now I would like to invite the audience. Do you have any comments or questions for Johanna? Please feel free to share your views or any experiences from your field of work. I could maybe, I could have a small question just to open up the discussion here. Did you, Johanna, find any of your results unexpected? Was there something that you would like to flag up here, something that you didn't expect when you planned your study and collected the data?
Oh, I think there were a lot of surprising elements in this study. But one thing is, for example, the fact that school welfare personnel and those working in that area felt that they could contribute much more to health promotion in the school setting, but they were limited to do so at this point due to their work descriptions and of course the sort of legislation behind it and policies and so on. So this was a bit ironic, I think, that they felt that they could and would like to do much more health promoting activities in the school, but they were limited to putting out fires, so to speak, as many of them said. So I think that's one of the many areas where a lot could be done to improve this in practice.
Thank you. Very interesting indeed. Anyone who would like to share, you can also use the chat if you don't feel comfortable to.
And I don't know, do we have anyone who has joined us who is themselves working in the school context or with students or I don't know?
As the chair of the session, I would like to welcome the new participants here who joined during Johanna's presentation. Welcome. And I hope you all feel comfortable to speak up and to share your views, either in the chat or by unmuting your microphone. But if all questions are raised for now, I would like to thank you once again for your presentation, Johanna. And then we will move on in the agenda of this workshop to the next presenter. And that is a PhD candidate, Janina Björk. I would like to welcome you to the stage.
Yes, hello. I will prepare my presentation.
Yes.
Okay, I think you see my presentation now. My name is Janina Björk, as Anna Forsman just told you, and I'm a PhD candidate in developmental psychology and also placed at Åbo Akademi University in Vasa, Finland. So Anna and Johanna and Emilia and Madde, all who are here today, are my colleagues at Åbo Akademi, but I'm at developmental psychology. I will focus on the workplace because my research interest is in health promotion at the workplace. And I have, together with Anna and another colleague from Stockholm School of Business, written a systematic review and meta-analysis, and it will be sent in for publication soon. The title is Bottom-Up Resource Developing Interventions Effectively Promote Work Engagement, a Systematic Review and Meta-Analysis. So this is what I'm gonna talk about today. I will start with a short introduction, then move on to the purpose, methods, results, and key takeaways. In the introduction, I would like to tell you that scholars and practitioners alike are interested in work engagement at the workplace because of the associated positive outcomes related to the well-being of the employees, such as satisfaction, but also to their performance. So work engagement is very much of interest. The field has matured during recent years, so the intervention research is increasingly warranted. For example, researchers have agreed upon a common or mutual definition provided by Salanova et al. 2002. And this definition defines work engagement as higher order construct, which is composed by three different subcomponents, and these are vigor, dedication, and absorption. So this is one reason to why the engagement field is quite mature already. And another reason is the measurement scale that is widely accepted and provided by the same research, the Utrecht Work Engagement Scale. And when we started this work, we wanted to narrow down our review a little bit, and we decided to consider two different identified trends. The first one was bottom-up approach, and the second was a focus on workplace resources. Bottom-up approaches entails that the employees themselves are responsible for the changes that are being made in the intervention, and workplace resources can be inherent in the individual itself, or they can be also residing in the social context or in the way work is organized, managed, or designed. The study purpose was to systematically review and synthesize the evidence base of interventions focused on promoting work engagement. So we always had the focus on the promotion, and we also focused, as I said, on interventions that had these two different trends in them, workplace resources and the bottom-up approach. We also aim to identify a mechanism underlying the evidence effectiveness, if any. Our protocol follows the PRISMA guidelines. Maybe some of you are familiar with them already. For example, these include instructions on the eligibility or inclusion criteria, also data extraction and coding, how these kind of processes are being made, and it's also common to include a flow diagram that tells about the process when articles are excluded along the way. Our eligibility criteria was with regards to the population, working individuals, of course. With regards to the intervention, we considered interventions that were bottom-up and focused on workplace resources. We included interventions that had a comparator, but also those who didn't have a comparator. And all of them had work engagement as the primary outcome, but often they also had a health or well-being related outcome included. And it was all kinds of various study designs. We conducted searches in 7 different databases, such as Web of Science, 4 different EBSCO databases, and Google Scholar and Scopus. And we also did quality assessment and checked for risk of bias following the NIST guidelines. And we used the review manager to meta-analyze the quantitative data. But here, of course, only those who were providing the necessary data was included. So we ended up with 31 articles in the systematic review, and in the meta-analysis there were 23 articles or studies. Overall, we see a small but promising evidence intervention effect on work engagement. Unfortunately, we couldn't meta-analyze the secondary outcomes, which were satisfaction and performance, because of the various measurement scales used, so they were not comparable. However, we could ensure the robustness of the findings through a sensitivity analysis, and we identified underlying mechanisms such as the format, the intervention foci, and the intervention approach. And we also described participant experiences of the interventions. And here they quite often described feelings of being healthier or feeling better, all kinds of well-being related outcomes, awareness, self-esteem, self-acceptance, compassion, and so on. And these are the key takeaways from the study. Organizations increasingly rely on employees' proactive behavior and engagement due to increased dynamics in the world of work. Therefore, individual bottom-up approaches are increasingly encouraged. This is a way to combat existing challenges. And interventions focused on promoting work engagement by developing workplace resources from bottom up are effective, according to our results, both the narrative synthesis and the meta-analysis. and I'm the corresponding author. So if you have any question, please send me an email, or you can also speak up now. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Janina. And I invite the audience. Do you have any comments or questions for the presenter? I could maybe also ask you, Janina, just as I did with the previous presentation. I was just sitting here and wondering, do you have any reflections on your results and your expected outcomes? Did you end up with results that you didn't expect, or do you have any comments?
I did expect an effect on the overall work engagement, as we also found, but I did also expect effect on the subcomponents individually, but these studies were too few, so we couldn't make any meaningful analysis of these, and the results were scattered. And I want to say that it's unfortunate that the health and well-being related outcomes weren't comparable in these studies, even though many of them included these kind of outcomes. They were not that comparable in the quantitative data. However, in the qualitative data, we at least got a picture which was saying us that work engagement interventions also work for the promotion of well-being of employees.
Thank you. Very interesting. Do we have any comments or queries in the audience before we move on to the next presentation? And I would like, again, welcome everyone who joined us during the presentation now, given by PhD candidate Janina Björk.
I think I see a question, but I have to take the presentation away.
Yeah, I see it too. We have a question in the chat. Could you please exemplify kinds of workplace resources you found more relevant, and in which country this been studied?
Yeah, if I start with the countries, so 17 of the 31 articles were conducted in the Netherlands. So it's really the Netherlands based and also Europe based. Only 3 of the studies were outside Europe, 1 in USA and 2 in Japan. So more research is indeed needed in other contexts as well. With regards to the different workplace resources, this was one of the underlying mechanisms that we found, the intervention foci. And we saw that strengths use these kind of resources that are inherent in the individual are really effective in these kind of interventions, and also something that we call mobilizing ego resources, which are also inherent, but more about the energy and vitality in the individual and in the cognitive and emotional side more. So these kind of inherent resources, more than resources, for example, in the job characteristics or in the social context, which was also quite surprising to us.
Thank you very much. And thank you for this question.
Thank you.
I think we will move on in the program. And then next up is PhD candidate Emilia Wiklund. Welcome, and the floor is yours.
Thank you, Anna, and thank you, Janina and Johanna, for interesting presentations. I will now share my screen with you. Hopefully you can see it well and hear me well. Two. Yeah, hi, I'm Emilia Wiklund, and I'm a PhD candidate in health sciences at Åbo Akademin University. And I'm going to present the study, which I'm currently working on, so it's still a draft. And it's called Breaking the Barriers for Municipal Level Health Promotion Targeting Older Adults. And it's a Nordic focus group study exploring the current state of art and the advances needed. So we will be moving to another context and to a bit another team focusing on older adults. Yeah, and as the title reveals, this study is based on focus group interviews that were conducted in two different regions, one in Finland and one in Sweden. And they were conducted before the COVID-19 pandemic. And as a health and social services aiming to promote health and well-being among older adults are provided by a wide spectrum of practitioners working within different organizations in the Nordic context, we decided to have a broad inclusion in criteria, and the practitioners that were participating in this study represented different organizations, both within the public sector as well as non-governmental and non-profit organizations and associations. And they also represented different professions. For example, there were social workers, nurses, home care workers, and physiotherapists, to only mention a few of them that were participating in the focus group interviews. And I think it's worth mentioning that this focus, that this study focused on health promotion more generally, not particularly on mental health promotion, but the focus of the discussions were mostly on psychosocial factors and more on well-being than on health. So therefore, I still perceive that this presentation fits into this workshop focusing on mental health promotion. So, health promotion in later life, what is it? Well, from the data analysis, views and expectations on what health promotion among older adults should ideally contain was identified. The informants highlighted the importance of seeing the older persons among the older adults, that is the important to recognize the diversity among the older population, and that it's really impossible to view the older adults as just one group. They also further suggested that it should be the person's unique needs and preferences that is that should be the starting point and the focus of health promotion initiatives. And yeah, that is important to acknowledge also that the older adults' view of health and well-being might differ from the practitioner's view of health and healthy aging. So seeing the persons was perceived as the ideal for health promotion practice. However, the findings also reveal the discrepancy that there's currently a gap between what is being perceived and suggested as the ideal practice and what is the actual realized practice. The informants identified barriers that were currently hindering them from being able to see the older persons with their unique needs and preferences. And some of the perceived barriers that the informants were experiencing in their everyday practice and that were hindering them from seeing the older persons were connected both to organizational factors as well as to the practitioner role. And some of the limits and borders of the organization that were, or the workplace that were identified in the data analysis, were the strict organizational structure and the inflexible working routines. And these were perceived as hindering the informants from being able to be flexible and to be attentive to fluctuating needs and and responding more spontaneously to the person or the situation. And one example of such routine that were perceived as inflexible were the increased demands of digital documentation that was experienced that it took time and focus from the older clients. And also barriers related to the practitioner role were also found in the data analysis. And it was the practitioner's own pre-understanding of health promotion and based on their education and personal and professional experience, and also pre-understandings regarding older adults. And they were seen also as barriers hindering the informants from being fully attentive to the older person's needs and preferences. And they also felt that sometimes their ethical competence was challenged when the practitioners were kind of ignoring their own professional view of health in favor for focusing or listening to the person's own preferences. However, the informants also suggests how the current health promotion could be changed in order to achieve a more ideal health promotion practice. So means for crossing the borders of the workplace and the practitioner or professional role was also generated from the data. So the informant suggested that the older persons, for example, technology-based tools could be helpful for the practitioners in seeing the older adults by assisting, for example, with more technical or mechanical work tasks, and thereby release time for the practitioners to focus on interacting with the older client. And also online platforms were suggested to have the potential for enriching the health promotion by adding alternative activities and services that could be accessed from whatever geographical position or despite limited mobility, for example. And also actively involving older adults in both the planning of the activities and services, as well as the realization of them, was seen as the really as the way forward for ensuring that activities and services will be based on older persons' preferences and not on the practitioner's pre-understandings. So the data also contained expectations of that the older persons themselves will have a much larger role in both the planning of the organization of and the realization of future health promotion initiatives. So to sum up, the study that I just presented will hopefully add to the health promotion evidence base by highlighting the practitioner's own perspective on health promotion practice and the perceived current bottlenecks and how they could be addressed and untangled in order to create more person-centered or more health promotion, future health promotion initiatives that focus on all the person's preferences and needs. And yeah, it highlights the importance of seeing the older persons among the older adults and to be attentive to unique needs and preferences, which also are in line with suggestions made in previous studies. And it also suggests that the digital technology is a bit of a double-edged sword in the matter of ideal health promotion practice. It both has the potential to support person-centeredness as well as being a barrier, taking time and focus from the older clients. And also user involvement was perceived as an essential element for creating and sustaining person-centeredness within health promotion among older adults. So that was a really short presentation of my of the study that I'm currently working on. And I thank you for your attention, and I'm looking forward to discuss more of the challenges and potential that were raised in the study findings later on in the panel discussion, later on in this workshop. But if you have any questions to me right now, so you can feel free, please, to ask them now also.
Thank you very much, Emilia. Yes, please, comments or questions related to this study? And please feel free to use the chat also. As you may notice, we've moved along from the schools and the younger target groups in health promotion work to the workplace settings and the workforce. And now we're among the older adults and the older adult populations. Any queries? I would like to invite you, Emilia, to comment like the other two presenters had the chance to comment on their results. Do you have any reflections when it comes to the findings and the expectations you had or you may have had before you started your study?
Yeah, I think it was the most interesting parts of my findings was that, for example, that the practitioners suggested that the future health promotion practice will become more peer-to-peer based or voluntary-driven or user-driven, that it will be the older adults themselves having a much larger role in the future practice, and their role as practitioners will become more diminished or much smaller. And I think it was interesting that they themselves thought this way and were expecting this development, and yeah, and that they also thought that it was a good development, that it will become more user driven. That I think was quite interesting.
Definitely, yeah, very important and a very interesting piece of information that we might be able to elaborate on in the panel discussion following the final presentation here today. If there are no further comments or queries for Emilia on her work, I would like to invite the last presentation, the final presentation, and our fourth presenter. Please, Magdalena, the floor is yours. Magdalena Heger, also a PhD candidate at Åbo Akademi University.
Hi, and thank you, dear colleagues, for your presentations. I'm Magdalena Heger, and I'm also a PhD candidate in health sciences in Åbo Akademi Vasa. But I also work in an island between Finland and Sweden, in the south of Finland, called Åland. So I will show you my presentation. I will continue, I think, where maybe Emilia was ending up with seeing the person, I think, because I continue with the older adult and the health and social care professionals' perceived confidence to care for older adults with mental ill health. Well, that is, if you to see the person, you have some need to manage to do that, and that's what I'm going to talk a bit about. So we'll see. Today you can see that the proportion of older adults is increasing. And about 20% of older adults suffering from mental ill health. But there's a problem in this also, because they are very often they have a combination with other somatic concerns. So it's not that easy to identify the mental ill health. But it's very important that the staff feel confident in having that they can coping with this problem and that they can manage and that they have confidence to take care of these patients or older adults. So this study look at what is confidence and what is needed from the staff perspective. So it's important. So the staff can help the older adult. In this study, the confidence is about the staff's belief in their own ability to help older adults with mental ill health. So in this study, we have an instrument that are looking at how is it to take contact. They are measuring themselves in how is it to take contact with a person with mental ill health. How are they assessing themselves to taking time to listen? Are they aware of how sad or a depressed person communicates, or do they ask for if someone have suicidal thoughts, for example? Do they recognize signs of mental ill health, and can they assess how serious is it? And can they also give information where the person can find the right help? This study is a cross-sectional study. A questionnaire was given to personnel outside psychiatric care settings. So it's staff in somatic care, health care, social care that got the instrument. It's about a little over 30, sorry, it's a little about over 1,000 participants, and the response rate was 51.7%. And in this questionnaire, the confidence in helping instrument was included. And this is the dependent variable. And all of these items where it was able to answer from one, not at all, and to a very great extent, 5 was a Likert scale. And also in the questionnaire, there were also like background characteristics, measures of perceived knowledge in mental ill health among elderly, attitudes and personal experience of mental ill health. And from all this material, the participants was the dependent variable was dichotomized so all the participant was either confident or non-confident. They were splitted. There were certain the participants should answer in the all the items they have had at least 3, 4, or 5 in the answer to get confident, and there also was the first quartile that was the limit to be confident. And the data was analyzed by descriptive statistics and logistic regression. So in the result, we could see that approximately 55.2% of the staff perceived themselves as confident in helping. I have to move around you a little bit here. and you can see in this table, you can see that you have Oh, I don't know if you can see my pointing here, but you can see that there were some factors or something that significantly larger proportions of participants were confident if they had lower education, if they were working in elderly and social care, if they had experience of mental ill health among relatives or in close friends, and if they had also higher knowledge score. So you can see that they were like a larger proportions of those in was confident in helping. Interestingly, you can see that, for example, participant working in specialist care had a lower proportion of confident people. And there were also something that had, there were no significant differences. For example, if you had, there were no gender differences, there were no differences in work experience, no matter how long you worked, you have, there were no differences if you were confident or non-confident in how to take care of older with mental ill health. Also, the attitude, how you saw, how they looked at the mental ill health. So, but if you look at them all together in the logistic regression, you can see that in the model, the contribution of importance of each variable, you can see here in the world, you can see that when you put them all together, these variables, you can see that workplace had the greatest contribution to the model. The reference were reference value one in elderly and social care, but you can see that it was a significant differences. So people working in specialist care had a lower odds for being confident, to be in the confident group. You can also see something else. Another contribution to the model was here on experience in mental ill health. So you can see that relative or close friends, quite a big amount of contribution to the model. And they were also, compared to those who haven't got any experiences of mental ill health, for example, in relatives, those with experiences in relatives and close friends had a higher odds for being confident, and those also had experience of mental ill health in work. Then you can also see here knowledge scale. So if you had knowledge in the scale, you can have at maximum 19 points. So you can see that for each point, more knowledge, you can see, then you had also a higher odds for being confident. There is also here the attitude showing that people or the participants that saw that mental ill health was comparable to somatic ill health, they also had higher odds for being confident. Here is also the reference value for with disagree. So you can see that agree and total agree were higher here in odds ratio. So so the discussion, sorry here for the spelling, I have had technical difficulties today. so what is what do you say You can see that the characteristics of the workplace may explain some differences. They can be due to the climate, the organizational structure. You can also think here, is staff in the specialist care more critical to their own competence and therefore being non-confident? However, nonetheless, staff in all contexts should experience confidence in helping our older adults with mental ill health. You can also see that experience in mental ill health in families or in close networks can lead perhaps to reflection of own professional approach and also have a more holistic appreciation. However, staff that had mental ill health of their own had very difficulties to using their own experience in work settings. In total, you can see that participants were positive. However, there were some that weren't. That could be a problem because negative attitudes can work negatively on confidence in helping or helping behavior. Also, if you see at knowledge, you can see that there were no significant differences if what kind of education you had. But in the knowledge, specific knowledge in older adults, you can see that there was significant. So it may be like that a knowledge or course education in combination with contact with older adults can increase confidence. So it's very to think to help the mental health promotion in older adults, it's important that staff got the support they need to develop confidence. And if they have that, they can meet the need of the clients in order to help them. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Magdalena, for your presentation. And what a lovely picture from the Åland Islands.
Yes, it's the best islands.
Also Nordic context.
Yes.
Thank you. Do we have any questions or comments related to Magdalena's presentation? Please feel free to speak up, unmuting your microphone or to use the chat. If not, maybe we are ready to move on to the next bullet point on our workshop agenda, and I can share here the presentation. Let's see here. I also flagged up before the presentations. So we have four brilliant presenters and their joint experiences when it comes to mental health promotion, maybe also health promotion in general. But the common issues that we share and that we would like to discuss today are related to the practitioners' experiences, because all these studies reflect on the various practitioners' experiences that we've managed to find in the findings of these studies. And another common interest is the interdisciplinarity, because we have joined forces with health scientists, social scientists, and so forth. So we have various perspectives and angles on mental health promotion work in these three contexts: the schools, and the workplace, and also elderly care and older people as a target group of the interventions. And we have some questions that we would like to maybe discuss together, and I will invite the presenters again to elaborate on their study findings and their work. But also I would like to invite the audience here, if you have comments or queries related to these questions that we've planned for the panel session, please feel free to use the chat or to unmute your microphone to comment, because I'm confident that we have experienced researchers with us today. Now I see a comment in the chat. Yes, I'm trying also to keep track on your comments there. But if we could then start with the first question related to lessons learned in these three contexts. Perhaps maybe Johanna start. What would you like to flag up? What would you like to highlight when it comes to identified best practices, or maybe identified any barriers identified, or also facilitators when it comes to mental health promotion work in the school setting?
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Anna. As I mentioned in my presentation, the participants in the focus group interviews in the study I presented were all agreed that the introduction of health education in the national curriculum was very welcome indeed, and in different ways contribute to, let's say, making the school arena a more health promoting place in that sense. In addition to this legislation I also mentioned, which places a lot of focus on the school environment being conducive to promoting health, mental health. But I also added there that there were some challenges in relation to health education. And I could perhaps mention some of these here now. Health education, it's a multidisciplinary subject, and the aim is, of course, to raise different topics related to health from a early prevention, but in foremost a health promotion perspective, with the aim of increasing overall health literacy among the pupils and students. And this subject is included from grade one up to upper secondary education settings also. Some of the personnel felt, even though they saw this as something positive, they felt that there was a risk that the teaching personnel as a whole put maybe sometimes too much trust in health education, and that the shared responsibility and the overall call for health promotion being embedded in all teaching in the school can sometimes be perhaps less emphasized because everyone is referring to the subject of health education and saying, oh, this is something which is contained and taken care of in this specific subject, whereas it's supposed to be a sort of cross-cutting theme which is seen in different ways in all the subjects. So this was quite an interesting viewpoint that was raised. Many of the participants also felt that health education could be emphasized more in the basic education grades 1 to 6, Here, health education is integrated with environmental studies, and in grades 5 to 6 with biology and geography, and so on. And they felt that sometimes health education, the themes, the lessons may be perhaps a bit pushed to the side, because they had so much that they needed to attend to with the other themes, and so on. So more emphasis could be placed on health education in grades 1 to 6. That was a very strong message that came across. Something else interesting was that there was certain themes that those teaching health education themselves and also other teaching personnel noted that the health education teachers wished to outsource to someone outside of the school setting because they felt unsure of their own competence, things like this. They were uncomfortable perhaps with the topic. And this came up because, as I said, the study I presented primarily focused on substance use and problems related to this. So substance use, anything surrounding that theme was one of the subjects that teachers may feel a bit more uncomfortable with and said, oh, we need someone external to come in here. And also sexual health, for example, was another theme that many felt it could be useful to have external people involved. So this was some interesting details to note here. And it has, of course, implications for the emphasis on these subjects, how is it taught and so on, but also our education of the teachers out on the field. The unit where we work, for example, is responsible for educating teachers who will be health education teachers in the school settings. So this is very important for us also to be aware of, that there are certain topics and so on that these persons feel less comfortable addressing, and to reflect on what can we do to support this. For example, there's a lot more I can say about legislation, for example. I don't know how interesting that is to everyone else, but I find it, it also touches upon those things raised by Emilia, talking about, you know, the ideal and then what's happening in practice. And I think that's reflected also in these legislation issues. The legislation in itself is very welcome, but the translation of it, there's a lot to do there. Still, but I think I'll end here at this point to give room to my colleagues. Thank you.
Thank you,
Johanna.
And next up, Janine, I would like to invite you also to share your views and reflections related to lessons learned and best practice examples from your setting, the workplace setting.
Yes, the workplace setting. So I think I touched upon this question when I responded to Ruth's question regarding the workplace resources that we found in our study. I think that this tells quite much about the best practices in work engagement interventions. I want to stress that these interventions should focus on inherent resources more than, for example, job crafting and that kind of resources that are entangled in the job characteristics. So that's one best practice learned. And another is that the interventions reveal that a universal approach was better than a tailored approach. And that was a little bit unexpected. So a best practice is also that intervention should be universal. So you, as practitioner, don't have to tailor your intervention according to the population's needs and preferences, it seems, because I think this is due to interventions, however, work in quite the same way for different kind of people. The main thing here is that the employees have to learn how to develop their workplace resources, and this is an individual process. However, how to learn it, which kind of methods and techniques used, they are the same for different kind of employees.
Thank you very much, Janina, for your comment. I would also like to invite Emilia and also Magdalena. You both have research conducted in the setting of elderly care and health services, social and health services, targeting older adults. Emilia, please share your views regarding best practice examples.
Yeah, I think one take home missing from my study is that it's also necessary to focus not only on the growing, not only on the demographic challenges and the growing aging population, that we also need to focus on the growing diversity among older adults when it comes to health promotion initiatives, and maybe that we should move away from viewing older adults as a burden for health and the social sector and for the health and social services, and also see, as the practitioners in my study highlights, seeing them as an asset also for future health promotion initiatives. And yeah, to pay attention to unique needs and preferences, and also to equity when it comes to health promotion, focusing on tailored initiatives will also become essential, and also to use and make use of the practitioners' contextual knowledge and experiences from their everyday work in how to design working routines that fits best into practice, and yeah, let them be a part of the creation and designing of new working routines, and also emphasize the voices of the older adults themselves when it comes to activities and services, and really listening to their preferences and their experiences on what works and what doesn't.
Thank you very much, Emilia. And how about you? What would you say, Magdalena, when it comes to best practice examples, considering your research?
I think that one thing that was very interesting that was seen in the study was that the experience also from mental ill health in family and in friends was very beneficial in work settings. So I think, also, of course, the work experience. So I think that maybe staff that have experience should be like mentors, or trying to reflect about situations that are happening with more unexperienced colleagues, so that they can share experience, got good experience, and so on, so they can develop their experience in how to take care of older adults with mental ill health, and that in that way they can be more confident, I think. So also I think organizational factors are quite important to know what is the organizational expecting from me, what is my role, what is my mission or something in my work, what should I do, because sometimes that is unclear. And collaboration with, psychiatric professionals also. A lot of staff are saying that they have a lot of learning needs and a lot of, they need a lot of support or as I should say, maybe like this, about 70% say that they need more support from professionals. So I think organizational structure and how to collaborate and get support from people that have the confidence in helping can help the those with not so much experience.
Very interesting. Thank you very much for these opening up comments. And now I would like to check with the audience again. Do you have any questions for the presenters today before we go on to the next issue that we would like to discuss in this panel discussion? Do you have any queries or comments? We would love to hear your views and your experiences related to the areas of mental health promotion in various settings. And maybe a non-Nordic view would also be interesting to contrast and compare with these Nordic research studies and related best practice examples. If not, maybe we could then open up the vital issue of user involvement. And the audience and also myself noted along the presentations today that each presentation also contained reflections related to how to involve the users, how to involve the target groups of when it comes to planning and conducting health promotion work in these settings. And it's also, of course, a very crucial principle when it comes to health promotion work in general. And here I would like to start with you, Janina. Would you like to say something about your findings in your study when it comes to involving the workers in the work engagement interventions?
Yes, I think it varied quite much across the included studies, how much they involved the employees in the interventions. Of course, all of the included studies in our study had a bottom-up approach. So the employees were responsible themselves for conducting the changes. And in that way, they were involved in all studies. However, when the intervention was planned in the planning phase, some intervention studies involve the employees while others don't. The same was for evaluation phase. So some involve the employees in evaluating the intervention outcomes, both with respect to the effect of the intervention, but also with respect to the design of the intervention, what kind of thoughts and experiences were evoked among the employees here. So I think it varied quite much. We didn't find any meaningful differences among them. I think it's because the evidence was so scattered. However, this is a bit little bit related to the question about the approach. Should it be tailored or universal as well? Because in the tailored approach, the employees were quite often involved in the planning stage, for example, by participating in questionnaires or interviews regarding the design of the upcoming intervention. But we saw there that the universal approach was more successful, and that was a little bit surprising, but I think it has to do with the fact that employees wanted to focus on the change that they were all responsible for themselves in the bottom-up approaches. So in the development phase, they were really involved, but in the other phases, less.
Thank you, Janina. Yeah, I agree. It's very interesting that in your meta-analysis, the evidence base is not is stronger for universal approaches than for tailored approaches. Very interesting. And how about you, Emilia, when it comes to your study on practitioners' views and experiences related to health promotion work and mental health promotion work targeting older adults?
In my study, they suggested that user involvement was a facilitator and a mean for combating, for example, pre-understandings and their own professional practitioners' pre-understanding regarding older adults and their preferences when it comes to health promotion initiatives. And user involvement have also in previous studies focusing more on digital technology and the designing of digital services and tools as a effective mean for combating pre-understandings and creating more services and tools that are in line with the target group's needs. And yeah, for example, the practitioner suggested that, for example, user involvement could, how it could be done in practice, for example, actively more increasing older adults in and engaging them, for example, in different kinds of advisory boards were suggested as one way to work with user involvement in practice with older adults. Or they also suggested that social media can become an effective or a good platform or forum for older adults to create more peer-to-peer based and user-driven activities and services that they could, for example, create events and activities themselves on social media and invite their peers and all other older adults to attend these activities and in this way create activities themselves and be involved in these health promotion initiatives. But I think that we still need a bit more research and maybe some guidelines on how to work with user involvement when it comes to more vulnerable groups of older adults, so it doesn't become only the older adults who already enjoy a better health status that co-creates the future initiatives and services, that this kind of information and guidelines would be really necessary in order to create more inclusive health promotion initiatives.
Thank you for these comments. Very interesting indeed. How about you sitting in the audience? Do you have any reflections when it comes to user involvement and how to make sure that the target groups are involved in the process and in the practices when it comes to mental health promotion. I remind you that you can also use the chat, so you don't have to speak up if you don't want to do that. Okay. We also have an issue related to responsibilities and the roles when it comes to mental health promotion practice. Who is responsible in the various contexts? And here I would like to invite Johanna to start off here. Do you have any reflections related to your research when it comes to the school setting?
Yes, thank you. As I earlier highlighted in my presentation, the school representatives we interviewed felt that health promotion, mental health promotion was a genuinely joint effort between schools and other settings, organizations, but considering the school context in itself, a lot of focus was placed on the teaching personnel, as they themselves and others expressed that they are the ones meeting the students on a daily basis and working with them. They're also responsible for the health education subject and so on. And I think I mentioned also, and related to this, that some of the school welfare personnel felt that they could actually contribute more than they are doing at this point to the general health promotion, mental health promotion, through being more in the classrooms actively, meeting students as a group, more the universal activity side of things. Whereas now they have the sort of regular health screenings, and then it's the, as I said, putting out the fires and addressing various health behavioral issues, health problems, and so on. So the responsibility could, I think it would be, our interviewed persons felt that it would be an advantage if there was sort of a something adjusted in these structures eventually. And also, if we're thinking about intra-school collaboration and communication, there were issues also around communicating around students if there were some tentative worries about persons, that a lot of the legislation prohibits communication sometimes between school welfare representatives and the teaching personnel, which was seen as a problem to that extent, that communication, which is so important and would be very beneficial to keep the lines open, so to speak, that this was hindered by this legislation as it stands today. And also the, as I said, mentioned earlier, the issue of the homes, that in addition to doing their best with the health promoting activities according to the legislation, according to the curriculum within the school, they felt that the role of the homes, the responsibilities of the homes could, the collaboration could be further developed. Some expressed a bit of frustration also that they tried to have a sort of more holistic family-centered approach many times and include families, parents in different activities arranged within the school setting, for example, but that it's very hard to reach everyone in these activities also, for example, and that it's a mutual relationship there, and they would sometimes wish for more response and activity from the homes. So that's in brief, I think, some of my thoughts on this issue.
Thank you very much, Johanna. Anyone else that would like to add to this query around responsibilities when it comes to mental health promotion practice? Please feel free to add to Johanna's comments.
I could add that in the intervention context, the responsibility of facilitating and encouraging bottom-up approaches, individual bottom-up approaches or strategies should be placed on managers and organization, while the responsibility for developing the workplace resources should be placed on the employees themselves. So employees are actually having a key role in this process. However, they really also need the support from the managers and supervisors in order to flourish, so to say.
Yes, yes, very important. Thank you. I think we're running up and rounding up the discussions. Thank you very much, everyone, the presenters, and to the audience, I would like to say that if any of you have any queries or questions that you maybe didn't have now in your mind, but it will arise later during the conference, then please, I'm sure that all the presenters today are very happy to discuss their findings and their work with you through the platform. So please feel free to be in contact with the four presenters today. And if there aren't any final burning questions, I think we will sum up this session, and I would like to thank the presenters and also you in the audience for the presentations and also for your queries and very interesting reflections related to your work. And thanks to the audience for your kind attention. And I think we are ready to sum up and close the session. I thank you for your participation, and I hope to meet you all in other sessions during the conference during this week. Thank you very much, everyone. Mm-hmm.